And now, outdoor ideas, fun, and even adventures on Outdoor Life with Carol Mundy, the Crow Knows. Join us as we discuss fun outdoor events and activities around Greater Cincinnati and beyond with naturalist Carol Mundy. Later in the program, we'll open up phone lines to take your calls and questions. Carol is the host of the website, thecrowknows.com. It's all about getting outdoors and enjoying our natural world on Outdoor Life with Carol Mundy on WMKV and WLHS. Now your host, Carol Mundy.
Good afternoon, and thank you for staying tuned right here on WMKV and WLHS. We're glad you're listening this afternoon, and we have another wonderful guest. I'm just on a roll here, George. I've got some really wonderful guests that come in, and it's the guest that makes the show. I mean, I have a good time. George and I sometimes goof around here together, and we have a good time. But it's always better when we have a guest, and we learn so much when somebody else is in the studio with us. Today, we're going to be talking about the history of papermaking. Today in the studio, we have Margaret Rhine, a local artist and papermaker. So I hope you will stay tuned. You may have some questions. You want to give us a call. Here at the studio, you can reach us at 772-9658 or toll-free at 877-772-9658. Peg, thanks for so much for coming into the studio today.
Well, I really appreciate the opportunity to share my love of papermaking with others in the world.
And I appreciate the invitation. I had an opportunity to go to Margaret's studio on Saturday. You were doing a workshop, and I just felt like a kid in the candy store. My eyes were just so wide trying to take it all in from all the different things, from collecting the materials that you had people cutting up plant material and cooking it down and smushing it and banging it with a hammer. So that was pretty impressive to see that process.
I think I have a curious mind, and I always think, like, oh, what would it look like if I did this?
Yeah.
What would that plant look like if I processed it a certain way and made it into a paper? You know, paper has so many qualities. There's the color, the texture, the thickness, the sound.
The sound, and that's something that most of us probably don't even think about.
If you shake the paper, what does it sound like? You know, a very strong fiber, making a strong paper like a bast fiber, which means like stems of plant material. That paper can be made into a very thin sheet, and it will actually rattle when you shake it. And it works really well for doing any kind of papers that you need a strong surface. Like a book paper, you would want to have something very strong. It can't be just fibrous and weak. You know, you have to think of the purpose and intention of the paper.
And how long you want it to last?
How long you want it to last has a lot to do with the way the fiber is prepared.
Okay.
And from like my son Adam in a elementary school science project at Sands Montessori did recycled paper from his school papers.
Yes, done that with brownies. Yes.
And so in that case, the fiber is already pretty short. It's commercially made paper. And then putting it in a kitchen blender shortens that fiber.
Chopping it up
more. So that makes a weaker sheet, but it still can be very interesting. And then depending on how long you blend that fiber, you can keep some of the fibers longer and then have some as shorter. So it kind of creates a visually an interesting sheet of paper.
When did you first get interested in this?
Well, in high school, I started freshman year. I went to Goshen High School in Goshen, Ohio. And I didn't have an art class. I was in a study hall, my first study hall ever. And actually, they gave me two. And I thought, this is ridiculous.
What a waste. Yeah, I always found some other thing to do.
Somebody came in to the first day of study hall, and they said, oh, we have a new art teacher. Does anybody in here want to take an art class? And, oh, I mean, I had my hand up in a minute. And so Mrs. Rose Fye was her name, the most amazing teacher. It was her first year of teaching. She was so enthusiastic. She was so creative in her thinking and really let us explore materials. So I took art 4 years and then really wanted to pursue art as a career. I went on to Edgecliff College here in Cincinnati as an art student. Really focused a lot on materials. I just loved the tactile nature of materials. So I really did a lot of weaving and spinning and batik. Didn't even know about papermaking at that point, but was getting into printmaking and I met another student there, Michael Dorsa, and he was very much into printing. That's all he wanted to do all day long, print, print, print. And so that really made you think about the paper. And we ended up getting together and actually getting married, and we decided to set up a papermaking studio. And
that's a pretty big jump to think about making this this your whole life's career.
Well, we took a couple of workshops, a craft summer up at Miami University in 1977. I took a sculptural papermaking class with Catherine Lipke. Because, you know, we think about paper something just flat.
Right.
But it can become anything.
You think of 2D.
Anything. Right. Yeah. So this was a very interesting expansion of my thoughts of the possibilities of papermaking. And at the time, there weren't that many people making paper in our world. I mean, initially, all paper was made by hand. But with the invention of the printing press, there needed to be a more easily accessible surface to print on.
So this industrialization of the process really took it away from the rest of us.
Well, it first started out using cotton, and there was rag pickers who would recycle the cotton to the papermaking industry. And then only later did they come to figure out how to use fibers from wood, from trees. It takes a lot of chemicals to break that fiber down to get the cellulose out of it. I don't use wood pulp in my own paper. I want to have something that's more archival. So my primary ingredient is cotton. Actually, it's called cotton linters, which looks like a blotter. It's already processed.
For those of us who learned to write cursive and had blotters.
You buy it from the papermaking industry. Mm-hmm. It's used in the industry to make high-quality bond papers for legal documents and things. But as a papermaker, it's a really easy material to work with. I do have a Hollander beater, which I can also process cotton rag, linen rag.
That's quite extensive in terms to go and actually break that fiber back down after it's come through a fabric.
Use a kitchen blender for a fabric or a strong fiber.
Yeah.
But sometimes, like this past weekend when you came to visit, I like to see what can happen with the plants that I grow. Because I do a lot of gardening, and I use a lot of the flowers that I have in my paper. I dry them in phone books and other things. And then create collages in the surface of the paper when I make the paper. But there's all the rest of the plant, and I hate to throw anything away. So,
well, that goes back to what you said earlier, was you're so curious. I think I'm part of that same school of thought, like, oh, I wonder how I could use this. And so you set it aside, or you decide that, oh, well, it's kind of like this other fiber maybe that you've used or that you bought commercially. And now you're going to break it down and see what you can do with it.
I think also, I've always had an interest in Asian arts, specifically the papers from China and Japan. And so I have an amazing collection through the almost 40 years that I've been doing papermaking. Mm-hmm. And I've visited Japan, visited the longest running paper mill in the country. Our son, Adam, became a student who studied Japan, went and lived there for 3 years, and was a teacher with the JET program after college. And so he was a great tour guide for us to go visit this village in the middle of nowhere. We kind of got lost, and it was a really hot summer day, but we did eventually get there and had a wonderful tour. We're able to make paper there in that ancient, beautiful facility up in the mountains, and actually get those papers and have them in my archives.
Let's think about these ancient ways of making paper before the Europeans made it to America. Let's jump back beyond Europe and back into China and then to Japan. These were the original, or maybe even before that.
Yeah, it started
the Egyptians,
Well, the Egyptians used papyrus, and we have some of that growing at my home too.
Yeah.
So they used the plant. It's kind of a square. A rectangular, triangular stem. And you actually are cutting through layers, very thin layers. And then in the substrate that you're making, the paper-like substrate, is those things are wet, and they are overlapped.
Okay.
And then you are very gently pounding them
to create
kind of
that.
Combine those things. Mm-hmm. And you do a crisscross. So you put them all lined one way and you kind of beat that. And then you put another layer and you're using water while the fiber is kind of gummy and then letting that dry. And that's what the Egyptians used to begin with. Then it kind of went to different parts of the world. So China is really where we think of the beginning of the type of papers more that we know.
Okay.
And again, they're using the inner bark of certain trees. I know in Japan, it's Gampi, Mitsumata, and Kozo. Now, Kozo is something more similar to what we can have here with our mulberry tree.
It's a mulberry like family. That. I was looking that in the book, that,
right.
And it looks similar to that.
And I have made it with our native mulberry trees here. It works fine.
Now, is that, when you're talking about that inner bark, are you still stripping that out and pounding it? You know, you're breaking down those fibers.
Yeah.
It's not like you have layers from that bark that you're using. You're pounding those down
right.
to break
you
out
have
the fibers.
To, it's a huge process. You have to... you're cutting like branches from smaller trees
okay.
that maybe don't exceed 2 inches in diameter and maybe a foot long. You steam them.
All right.
And then you strip the bark off.
Wow.
And then you have to, while it's still wet, you're soaking it in water, mm-hmm. you have to scrape the outer dark bark off of the inner lighter bark.
Okay.
And it's actually the inner lighter bark that you're using to
but
make
then
your
you
paper.
Still have to basically then, masticate it
right,
to get
then
it
you
to...
have to in the traditions of China and Japan they would have different types of beating devices, even like two sticks or
like
a mallet,
almost
a wooden
like giant
mallet
drumsticks
yeah
okay.
or a mallet, or then they developed more like a stamper, which
okay.
is like a giant piece of wood that just pounds, like drops and pounds,
okay.
drops and pounds, and they keep adding water.
A little more efficient size-wise than the person with
right.
the mallets.
To do a larger quantity. And then, like, the Hollander beater was developed more for Western papers when they started making papers with cotton, because it wasn't enough to just beat it with a stick or...
it wouldn't break them down.
It wouldn't break them down enough. And
when you're working with these different fibers, I know you've mentioned water, but... On Saturday at the workshop, I saw that you had them in the cooker outside, big pots, and there was water, and then you added lime or washing soda. How did they figure out, or how did you figure out, what other type of chemical was going to be necessary to help break those fibers out?
Well, I have a lot of books as my resource material these days, how they figured it out in the older times.
Mm-hmm.
There's a natural process called retting. And like, let's say if you had a milkweed stem plant, if you actually let it stay outside in the winter, it sort of starts breaking down those layers of
yeah.
of this outer surface. In Japan, they would sometimes harvest, cut down the kozo trees, strip the bark, and then put it in streams
oh.
for weeks on end. And
okay.
that would work
soften
on softening
mm-hmm.
the fibers and washing out the impurities. But again, you still had to do all those other steps. But yeah, we actually were using lye, and also you can use washing soda or soda ash. What you're doing is to make good paper, you need cellulose. So you want to break out anything that isn't cellulose and rinse that away. So you have to keep, once you've done the cooking, you have to rinse it a lot before you can actually start working with it, because
well,
and you have to wear all kinds of safety precautions.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully, as you're moving through that process, the listeners will understand and take for granted what we take for granted. We're going to hold that thought. We have
okay.
to take a quick break. Listeners, stay tuned. We're going to continue this conversation with Margaret Ryan, and we'll be right back.
Back Tree Service proudly sponsors Outdoor Life. Back Tree Service has been saving trees throughout the greater Cincinnati area for over 30 years. Their ISA-certified arborists specialize in preserving trees with health issues like emerald ash borer and offer insect and disease treatments and control, fertilizing and soil remediation, and pruning. Back Tree Service. Tree physicians, not morticians. Information at backtree.com or 513-742-TREE.
Thanks for joining us. You're here in the WMKV studios. I'm Carol Mundy, the naturalist here. And on the program today, we have Margaret Ryan of Terrapin Paper Mill. She's a local artist and paper maker. And I'm hoping that you're as as enthralled with this topic as I am. Hopefully, you know, if you're driving, you can pull off and safely listen because it needs your full attention. If you'd like to join the conversation today, perhaps you have questions or want to learn about some of the classes that Margaret offers, you can reach us here at the studio at 772-9658 or toll free at 877-772-9658. Well, we were talking about the idea of how much for granted you think about the volume of paper we have in our lives and the process, whether it's the simple paper or the beautiful artist paper, the process is still very similar, just more hands-on in your case than the big industrial pulpers that are in the world.
Yeah, I had the opportunity to go visit Champion Paper and the paper mill up in Chillicothe, Ohio, and to see, I mean, it's like football field size giant machines with rolls and rolls and rolls of paper.
And that is made from wood fiber from trees that have been pulped out.
Absolutely, yeah. And a lot of bleaching and processing needs to go on in order to take that wood pulp and turn it into the piece of typing paper that you're using today. Where I don't have to use chemicals, if I'm just making paper from cotton or linen, it's a mechanical process. It's just the fiber and the water and the Hollander beater. And the difference between a Hollander beater and a kitchen blender is the Hollander beater blades are not sharp. They're wide.
Okay.
They're stainless steel, and there's a stainless steel bed plate. And you're actually, in my case, that this beater is designed by Howard Clark from Twin Rocker in Brookston, Indiana. The roll lowers down onto this metal bed plate, and it's forcing the water into the cells of the fiber. It's not cutting.
Okay.
It's just kind of spreading the fibers. It's called defibrillating. Like if you think of a 3-ply yarn.
Okay.
And you've cut it and then start unflying the end.
Okay.
So you have all these contact points to make a very strong sheet. Now, a kitchen blender can only cut.
Right.
So it's just shortening the fiber. So it's not going to make a strong piece of paper, but for experimentation, for children, for...
Yes, it's a good introduction for scouts and kids.
Let's say sculptural purposes, then, you know, you can make very beautiful paper in a low-tech way.
Have you found a specific plant fiber that is your favorite?
I really like what linen can do.
And so that listeners know, that comes from the plant called flax, so that we understand that. Sometimes we kind of lose that connection.
Right. What flax is a very, very strong fiber. And what's interesting is the longer I beat the fiber, the fiber becomes like it's absorbing more and more water. But it also somehow, the character of the paper changes. It becomes very translucent.
Huh.
So when I make that paper, it's no longer opaque. You can actually see more clearly through it. It shrinks a lot more.
Oh, my goodness.
Because I've pushed all this water into the fibers, and then as it dries, the water leaves.
Yeah.
So it could the sheet could shrink like an inch in all the different directions. So you have to plan ahead when you're making a paper for a certain project. What kind of fiber are you using? What's the shrinkage rate? I also use, in most of my papers, an internal sizing agent. So it's a plastic polymer product that's neutral that you buy from the paper making supplier.
And that does that stop that? Or
what
or
it does is it
kind of
coats
freeze
the fibers.
That action?
And so like if you wanted to do printmaking on it or watercolor or calligraphy, it would keep the ink from just bleeding into the fibers.
I understand.
So if you want to, you know, like imagine a calligrapher, it's called water leaf if there's no sizing. So if you started
to touch
to write,
the ink
it
and
would
it just
bleed
bleeds
all
over
the place.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, there are different things to add to paper to give different characteristics, but I do love how linen looks and sounds in the things that I've done. Also, I have made paper the Japanese style. There's Western and Eastern ways of making paper. So in the Japanese Chinese style, you have the screen, the keta and the su. The su is the screen on top. The keta is the frame. In this case, the screen actually comes off that mold, and it's flexible, and you're transferring the layer of fiber from that screen to your felt. You've also done multiple dippings with one sheet of paper. Like, you could be dipping 5-6 times.
And the layers of fiber continue to cling to that?
Yeah, but it's very thin layers. Okay. There's a certain ingredient that you add that makes the fiber very slippery.
Grab onto
so it just makes a little bit each time and makes a very strong sheet.
Western, kind of like a slurry with a potter. They have that very that slip mm-hmm. that they use.
Right, so much thinner. And then Western style, I'm only doing one dip. The screen is permanently affixed to the mold. Mm-hmm. And so it's a different type of process and different characteristics. Most people, when they think of like, they call it rice paper, but it's not really made from rice. It was just thin paper that was, when they imported rice to begin with, the paper was wrapped around the rice.
Got it.
So it kind of came to be called rice paper. It's actually...
And that had almost a shiny, what we would call today, I think of what we call today vellum, kind of like that rice paper. It has that little bit of sheen. It's somewhat translucent. But vellum originally was an animal product.
Right. Vellum right. is animal. A lot of times that the surface of the paper is determined by what is it dried on? What is it pressed on? Like,
okay.
So in my pressing, my felt surface will transfer that pattern onto the paper. If I then take that piece of paper and stick it on a board with a very wood grain texture and attach it to there, when it dries, that side attached to the wood will have that texture. It's very, I love also experimenting with that textural differences. I have all kinds of things I find from the thrift stores, old lace and old textured fabrics and
you add that in
metal. If I dry the paper on that,
it takes on that
texture. So as an artist that does collage, it gives me a lot of potential to create different visual effects depending on the light as it hits the surface of the paper.
What are the uses that you have once you've made your paper? Tell us about some of the uses that you use your paper for.
Well, I have been a visual artist using paper as my medium.
Okay.
And I do collage. What I like about the paper is it's this loose liquid that can bind whatever I want to the surface in the paper once I've formed my sheet. So all my image making is actually done in the wet paper making process.
Hmm.
I'm layering up my base sheet that I formed onto my felt, and then I might have other papers or fabrics or lace or everything. My studio is filled with things.
I could tell that.
I do a production item where I use my dried plant materials, and so that's another thing, and I do sell them at different places, at the Civic Garden Center and at Urban Eden here in Cincinnati, and Ohio Craft Museum. So that's playtime, and I also invite other artists to come and make novelty papers, I call them, with me, because it's just a wonderful experience to do that.
The students that you had in the class on Saturday at the workshop, had they participated before, or was there, I mean, do you have people brand new?
You know? I do. Those were all people that had made paper with me before.
Okay.
In other classes, but I often teach classes in the world at large, and also at my studio. My studio is very small, so really each class only has room for 5 students. And
because it takes so much equipment.
a lot of equipment.
A lot of back and forth. Yeah.
Yes, but no, I've given workshops at the Cincinnati Art Museum, up at the Dayton Art Institute, and different schools around for students as well.
Margaret, in our last few minutes, why don't we talk to the listeners about how they can find out about some of the workshops and presentations you've been involved, and then is there a way to make contact with you if they want to pursue this? Now that we've gotten really interested, they're revved up.
Right. Well, I do have a website. My name, margaretrein.com.
Spell the last name for me.
R-H-E-I-N.
Okay.
And I do try to update that. I also am on Facebook under Margaret Rein, and I'm more active there. I'm also very active with the Cincinnati Book Art Society and put posts on their website, because obviously books are made of paper. So there's a lot of connections with the decorative processes in and on paper. And I really like to share information with others. So I find Facebook is a wonderful way to do that. And
it's kind of like the community bulletin board, because once somebody has an interest, it's everywhere.
Right. I really love that. I mean, I have friends from all over the world in the papermaking community through Facebook. If they're interested in a workshop, really just like they could
go to the website and send you an email
or email me.
Something.
My email is pretty easy. It's paperpeg@gmail.com. My name is Margaret, but everybody calls me Peg, so that's didn't make sense to do Margaret Paper or whatever.
Yeah,
Paper Peg flows more easily.
Pretty easily.
So, and any questions, I'm more than glad to answer if people want to email me about issues or interests that they might have. And I do a show called Studio Collection every fall with a group of very talented women artists in all different media. And that also on Facebook or
And that's here locally in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's at the Harmony Lodge. It's always the Saturday before Thanksgiving.
Well, that would be a great time to come out and see the studio. What was the name of the show?
It's Studio Collection.
Studio Collection.
It's at Harmony Lodge the Saturday before Thanksgiving from 10 to 4. It's an amazing show. It's very well attended. I know it's over 20 years. It started in my studio, but
I
lose track of how many years. It's just a fantastic group of women artists.
Well, as you can see, I'm just a little bit excited about this topic, and hopefully you will have an opportunity to continue this conversation, and I would encourage all of you to go check that out, margaretryne.com, is that right?
Yeah.
All right, or paperpeg@gmail.com. So go check those out, get involved, take a class, get curious. That's the whole idea behind some of this programming. We're glad you're able to tune in today. You've been listening to Outdoor Life. This is Carol Mundy. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks for joining us for Outdoor Life with Carol Mundy and the Kronos. Join us every Friday at 1 p.m. as we discuss fun outdoor events, ideas, and activities. You can also follow Carol's naturalist website, thekronos.com. That's thekronows.com. It's Outdoor Life with Carol Mundy on WMKV and WLHS, streaming around the world at WMKVFM.org.
Support comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop in Forest Park, located at Kemper and Winton Roads next to Fitworks. Wild Birds Unlimited specializes in backyard birding, featuring premium no-filler seed, feeders, houses, baths, and pole systems, hummingbird food, and supplies too. Knowledgeable staff and furry friends help make Wild Birds Unlimited in Forest Park a birding destination. More information at 825-7777 or WBU.com.
And we just finished talking about paper. We want to remind you that we were also talking about books in the last half hour. And the book show is on today at 5 p.m. Mike Martini and Kevin Grace will be here with special guest Gabrielle Fox. They'll be talking about bookbinding. That's this afternoon, Friday, August 5th at 5 p.m., 5 to 6 p.m. on WMKV and WLHS, The Book Show, today at 5.
The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program or of WMKV Radio, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS Radio, the Lakota Local School District, or its staff or management. Discussion of specific points and general topics on this program are not meant to be taken as specific